Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. B-F-F-T. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
When we engineer this show, it's not just arbitrary who we bring on the show. We needed Peter Jacobson because we wanted a golf expert. We have Maury Brown coming on here because we wanted a baseball expert. I want to talk about some baseball. Senior contributor at Forbes, a member of the Baseball Writers Association of America. He's a husband. He's a father. He's a good guy. Maury Brown joining us. How you doing, man?
I'm great, John. How about yourself?
Doing well. I'm doing well. I'm having fun. And, you know, I'd love to talk some baseball with you, man. I'm simultaneously frustrated. And tell me where you stand on this, Maury. I'm frustrated with some of the umpiring, but I'm also a little empathetic because I realize, like, that box on my screen, it's easy for me to call balls and strikes from my living room. I don't know how I would do behind the plate.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the big shift. That's the huge shift in how the game has been looked at and how the umpires are being viewed. I mean, look, that was a slow creep, right? The strike zone making it in its way to the broadcast. I think there's one national broadcast that doesn't have it. But for the most part, right, I mean, you're looking at it, and that has clued in fans to see it when you have the box, and then they've gotten more used to it when they go to the games or when they see it without it. So there's that, and there's some other stuff going on here. And I think that the worst part about it is the two of them are not the same, and I'll get into it here in a second. But what's basically happening here is the umpires themselves are not being graded the same way that we're seeing it, and that's an issue.
What do you mean by that? Give us an idea of what's happening with the grading.
So now there's all kinds of, you can follow Twitter accounts or on social media that will grade the umpires based upon the game day strike zone that we see on MLB.com, all that StatCast data, and other analytics that look into it and grade the umpires. And again, it gets back to that box that you and I see on the screen. So there was a very, you know, there's an infamous game in April where Kyle Schwarber absolutely lost with Angel Hernandez behind the dish.
Yes.
And got ejected. And it was, he was rated at like 88%. And Joe West went on the air, and now the retired umpire, right, that everybody knows about for the most part. And he went, I called up Angel. And he said that the way that the league graded him, he got a 96. So here we are, we're looking at it one way, and the umpires are being graded, and we can all see it based upon the K-zone that we see on television, but they're being graded differently by the league. And the reason for this, John, and this is maddening, this absolutely drives me nuts, it has to do with the Umpires Association, with the union. They basically built in a buffer for the umpires. And to me, this is just rewarding bad behavior. And we're going to have Angel Hernandez in here for a long time because he'll say, look, rightly so, look at how my grading is. And if we look at it, of course, on screen, we go, that's nowhere close to the strike zone. And so whether it's framing by the catcher or whether it's, you know, painting the box and pitchers being able to expand their strike zone or whatever it is, once that K zone made it to television, that's the way umpires should be graded. Again, it is exactly as you say. I mean, you know, it's easy for you and I to sit there and watch it on TV. But those guys are getting paid for that. And some of them are not bad, and some of them are downright terrible. Angel Hernandez probably tops that list.
We're talking to Maury Brown, a contributor at Forbes, member of the Baseball Writers Association. I'm looking at batting averages in 2022, the league hitting .234. Only in 1968, where the league hit .237, have they been lower. It's a small sample size to this point. Are we going to see history here? Are we going to see the lowest batting average in Major League Baseball history, or Do you expect that to sort of loosen up as more games are played?
Well, I hope not, John. I mean, we took pitchers out of the equation, right? And if you look at the pitcher slash line in the NL when they were batting, it was horrible. I mean, when you're hitting around 100. So you took them out and added the DH in the NL. And so almost by default, you would have expected them to go up. So when you see this, it's a bad sign. And again, I think the biggest problem is that a lot of the batters are trying to basically either hit over the shift or just hit the ball out of the park. I mean, there's been so much emphasis on launch angle and whatnot. Conversely, on the other side, we've seen pitchers now where the overall velocity, and it's not just velocity, it's movement with velocity, has increased dramatically. That, of course, has made, you know, starters run much shorter. I mean, we have openers now where in Tampa Bay where basically, you know, the starters use like somebody out of the bullpen. And what's happened, of course, is that when you throw those things together, right, when you've got guys trying to hit the ball out of the ballpark, when you've got a lot of velocity with movement, you're going to see this happen. I don't know if removing the shift, which is going to happen here, or we're going to see, well, I should say, we'll see less radical shifts. We won't see the radical shift anymore. We'll have to see a foot on the infield dirt on one side of the base on it and on the other. When that happens, I'll look to see whether that changes things. But it's not going to change it dramatically. I don't know, John. I mean, you could say there's a 99-day, you know, lockout, and batters are behind on that, and maybe it goes up, you know, God willing, because that's not the look that baseball needs. And I don't think pitch clock or anything else is going to fix this. Maybe an automated strike zone a little bit, but to me, in that sense, you know, it's a Band-Aid. It's not fixing the overall problem.
In the American League, you've got several players that are having remarkable years, Shohei Ohtani among them. Aaron Judge is in there, Jose Ramirez, and Mike Trout. Who do you like as your early front runner for the MVP in the American League?
Well, I'm going to go with Trout because he's running on a historical OPS level right now. It's something that we haven't seen really since that stat came along. And again, the thing that's interesting with the Angels is you really have two guys that are in there that are MVP caliber. And it was always one of those things, you know, look, we live in Portland. It would be great to see the Mariners be better than they are right now. They're, you know, off to a horrible start right now. But the Angels, it was always, what would they be like with a healthy Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani together? And we're getting to see it, and I'm excited for that. So right now I'm going to say it might be Mike Trout, but it could be, you know, a two-way race within one team. And that would be pretty remarkable, you know, when I look at it. And so, again, you know, it's, I think, great for baseball fans to see these stars performing and healthy and being able to do the things that they do when they are healthy. So, you know, God bless it. I hope we get to see it all season.
Fernando Tatis Jr., when he fractured his wrist, Maury, I thought, you know what, there goes the Padres. You know, and instead, they have played well. And Manny Machado's playing lights out for them. You know, that Padres organization is such a good story in the last couple years. You know, where do you see them in the National League?
Well, first of all, the Padres to me are that story is super important for the league and baseball in general, because it just shows that if teams try, you can have an exciting product on the field. This, you know, is pointing to other teams like the A's or the Pirates that aren't really trying. And so there's that. The problem with the Padres have been they've been streaky. And if you look at them, of course, if you were to look at them year over year about now, they were looking pretty good. And, of course, then the wheels fell off at the end of the season. So it'll be interesting to see, right? I mean, if they go ahead and have something happen to where Tatis can potentially come back or that they continue to go on this tear, it's going to make for, I think, a very dramatic, you know, potential three-way race in the NL West. And again, you know, the Dodgers and Giants have both been great, and they've, you know, owned the National League for the most part. So, you know, it's weird. It reminds me so much, John, of looking at the AL East for the longest time. It was, you know, largely a two-horse race between the Yankees and the Red Sox. And we watched that for the longest time, and now it's shifted out west. And I think that that's great for baseball. I think it's great for us, of course, because we live out here. So, you know, if we have a situation to where it's coming down to the wire with three teams, I think it'd be a great story.
Then, speaking of great stories, how about the Mets? What do you make of the Mets at 22-11?
Well, you know, I'm sure that their new owner, Steve Cohen, is happy. You know, I mean, they're doing everything that they were supposed to do. And, I mean, let's not forget that Jacob deGrom isn't pitching for them. I mean, it's really extraordinary what they're doing right now. And, you know, they're about ready to go to Seattle, and woe to any Mariners fans out there, because they're going to go out there and probably get shellacked. But they look great. They really do. And, again, I think that the thing about them is they seem stronger to me than the Yankees. And, again, I don't know why I feel this way. I mean, right now I look at them, they feel that way. But, again, both those clubs, both the Yankees and the Mets, have been streaky by nature. And the Mets, of course, have a history of falling apart during the stretch. So it's always difficult to, you know, you try and read the tea leaves early on like this. You know, I mean, and to me, you really don't get a clear picture until you come out of the All-Star break in July. So, again, I just look at it this way. I think that, you know, when people saw DeGrom go down, they went, oh, man. And then Scherzer was banged up there and was a little bit, you know, tender at first. And now they seem to have come back around on it. So if they're looking this hot when they go into the All-Star break, then I'll say it's the real deal. But again, you know, I look at baseball in the here and now. I mean, enjoy it for whatever it is when it's going on. And then, you know, of course, in the long run, we start to get in, you know, to the long game. And again, it's always a marathon, not a sprint with baseball.
Maury Brown with us, contributor, senior contributor at Forbes, member of the Baseball Writers Association. The baseball itself has been a story. The pitchers are saying it's a little slick. You know, they're using the humidors with the balls. Is baseball going to fix that? Will they tweak it like they have in some other years midseason, or is this the ball they're going to use for the whole year?
Well, right now there's a question whether there's two again. And, or, you know, the league will say that they manufactured the ball whenever it was. It could be last year, you know, or they could be ones that are now. There would be maybe some differences in material. It's not like they go, we're going to make two separate balls. It's a matter of how they're procuring the materials and whatnot. But, John, this is ridiculous. This is absolutely ridiculous. I remember talking to Rob Manfred about this 5 years ago, and he said then that they needed to get a consistent ball. It's the one item in the game, the one thing that should be absolutely pristine. It should be consistent no matter what. And, of course, the problem is that as data, which baseball is hugely driven on, has become more available, it's easy for someone outside of baseball to go and look at the data and show that it's acting oddly. And so right now, the humidors, you know, are probably playing a part in this. But there have been some where it looks like they're manufactured oddly. There's been some with flat spots in them, which you should never see. So they have to get this figured out. There is no excuse for it, because the league has a large stake in the manufacturer that makes the ball. So, look, I mean, if you can't control the one thing that should be consistent, right? The ballparks are all different. You can have slightly different gloves. You can have different weights to your bat within, you know, certain specs. The ball should be consistent. And, again, if the pitchers are saying it and we're all talking about it, then it's going to continue to be a problem. And the only way that the league gets around this is if Rob Manfred comes out and goes, you know what, let's just be transparent. We're screwing up. We don't have this right. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to be transparent about it. But they continue to say that there's no issues. You know, we're doing everything the same. And that's absolutely not true. And it just makes them look bad. They should be transparent. And maybe that has solved the problem. You know, it may not make the problem go away entirely, but at least they'd be transparent about it.
I'm looking at the numbers from this season. You know, they played 926 combined games. The teams are hitting .234. That's the lowest batting average of all time. I think if this were the NFL, this were the NBA, there would be adjustments. Maybe it would be an officiating adjustments in those leagues. That's probably harder to do with Major League Baseball. But leagues have figured out, Maury, that offense is what people want to see. How do you do that in baseball? Do we shrink the strike zone a little bit? Do we do what they did after Bob Gibson's great ERA season and say, okay, we're gonna lower the mound? Like, what do we do here?
Well, and you're touching on the thing that they need to do. They've gotten so, I think they've just got into a state of atrophy over how fans react in the age of social media. We've got so many purists that are like, don't monkey with the game. You're monkeying with the game. And yet, conversely, we look at the numbers and it's just like, this is bad. You know, you're not, I'm a core fan. I'm going to watch 200 games a year. And if I'm sitting here saying it's bad, how are you going to bring in the fringe fan or the average fan? How are you going to build, your fan base? And doing nothing is not going to solve the problem. So, look, let them do some stuff. If they're going to make bigger bases and maybe increase steals, great. You know, whatever it's going to be, pitch clock, and we get the game a little bit crisper, if that, somehow affects things. If they have to lower the mound, if they have to do something to strike zone, by God, do it. Because as you can see, year after year after year, it continues to go down. And I get back to that thing that we were talking about at the onset. You know, either players are going to start to hit for average and stop trying to, knock the cover off the ball, or we're going to have to do something with pitchers where we're going to say the starter has to go 4 or whatever it's going to be, right? Mm. We have to get to a point where there is that, because managers, I don't blame the managers. They're going to use whatever it takes to win because that keeps them in their jobs. And so, the overall, when I talk to veterans of the game, I've talked to a couple of guys that have been around the game for, 15 years. And they see it. It's very obvious that they go, we're losing the idea that the game is entertainment. And let's not lose sight of that sports in and of itself is an entertainment platform. Seeing a bunch of guys hitting into the shift or seeing guys strike out, you got to have some action. And so, they do need to do something. Unfortunately, that falls on Rob Manfred. He's going to get beat up by it, by the purists that say, just leave the game alone. But again, you mentioned that Bob Gibson year and what they did then. And, of course, we didn't have social media back then. It would have been interesting to see what happened. We don't see the outcry. When the game first came about in its earliest days, there was change almost, within a season all the time. So, I'm of the mind that they need to try some things. If it doesn't work, then roll back. But, again, they need to do something because, you're mentioning it. The batting averages, if they stick, will be historically low, and that's not entertainment to me.
Yeah, the last time was 68. Gibson was, just lights out. They hit, the teams hit 237 in 1968. They lowered the mound by 5 inches. They shrank the strike zone a little bit. The next season, batting averages popped right up, and, here we are dealing with it again. Maury, I am going to appoint you Commissioner of Baseball. You go get it done.
Well, John, don't do that because everybody hates the commissioner. Everybody hates him.
You like that salary. You like Manfred's salary. You could deal with the
that
hate.
That would fix things. Yeah. That'll fix things.
Maury, you take care of yourself. People, if you want to follow Maury on Twitter, he's a great follow on Twitter if you love baseball or other things. But you can follow Maury at BizBallMaury on Twitter. Maury, thank you for your time.
John, thanks so much for having me. You have yourself a great day.
You too. There's Maury Brown. It's good stuff. It's baseball. The beauty of baseball is you get numbers, right? People love numbers. Look at the back of a baseball trading card. It's batting average. It's ERA. It's RBI. It's hits. I used to look at walks to strikeout ratio for hitters and pitchers. And, we have the numbers. We have the data. Baseball is a data-friendly game. The data is telling us right now that baseball's in trouble, that it has become a pitcher's game. Strikeouts are up. We watch all these pitchers flirting with no-hitters all the time or throwing no-hitters, as we saw last night. And then you see the batting average. Like, literally, if you look at the batting average right now in Major League Baseball, it's not rocket science. The year is 2022. Teams are hitting 234. I'm going to give you the next four low batting averages. 237 in 1968. I mentioned it before. They lower the mound. After that, 1908, 239. 1888, 239. 1967, 242. 1884, 243. We are watching baseball players hit at a clip that we have not seen since 1968, 1908, 1888, 1884. If Rob Manfred doesn't fix this, either with the baseball or by instructing umpires to squeeze the strike zone down, I do think that's the solution that you could quickly make. You tell the Umpires Association, we need to squeeze a little bit with the strike zone. And we're going to squeeze the strike zone by an inch or two here, an inch or two there. We're going to make these pitchers throw the ball over the plate, and let's see what happens. If they're still striking batters out at a clip that we have, by the way, never seen before in baseball, you know, the three highest strikeout years in baseball history, get this, in 125, 130 years of baseball history, the 3 years in which batters struck out the most, 2020, 2019, 2021, 2022. Something going on, folks. Got to fix it, baseball. Leave it here. You got the BFT.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
So many big things going on in sports right now. Got this controversy in the golf world. We got the news about the Derby winner, Rich Strike, not going to run in the Preakness. Oh, I got something to say about that. Anna told me during the commercial break that, you know, we got this birthday party going on over here this weekend, that we are going to be going with, what was it, Anna? Which bouncy house are we going with here?
It's shaped like a birthday cake.
Ooh. I can't wait to get into that bouncy house.
No adults allowed.
No. If I am doing the yard work to clear the space for said bouncy house, you better damn well believe that I am going to be the first person hopping up and down in that bouncy house.
Yeah, okay. That's going to go so well.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. I'm not saying there's going to be a bunch of kids in there rattling around like marbles.
Yeah.
I'm just saying I'm jumping in that bouncy house at least one time.
Okay. Make sure you let me know when you're going to go in.
So we're paying for this thing. Mm-hmm. Why can't we?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And we talked all about experiences on your birthday. That's number one right there, getting to jump in a bouncy house. Especially if you guys paid for it, you got to take advantage.
Damn right.
I just don't want to pop this thing before the kids.
Oh, what do you think? I'm going to pop it?
You're a grown man.
I weigh too much?
No.
Are you saying I need to lose weight?
It's not a comment on your weight. It's just a pragmatic statement, observation.
We got a lawyer friend, one of those attorneys. He said, you're going to get sued.
I know. He was telling us we need to have people sign waivers before they get in the house.
This is just a taste of the trampoline for you guys.
Hey, we're going to drop your child off here at this birthday party. Do you mind signing this waiver, clearing us of all liability while your child is in our care? You know what I mean?
Can you imagine? Oh.
Yeah. I can't imagine. I actually can.
I don't want to resort to that.
Our insurance agent's going to call because he's going to be listening to the show. He's going to be like, all right, we need to increase the umbrella coverage here, you know, whatnot. I want to talk about Rich Strike. It was a hell of a Kentucky Derby. I loved it. I still find myself watching the call of Rich Strike winning the damn Kentucky Derby. It was hell. It was like hell. It was so fun. It was so much fun to watch that happen in the Derby, and I'm now hearing that Rich Strike is not going to run in the Preakness, which at face value disappoints me. Like, the sports fan in me is disappointed that we're not going to get to hear the horse and the jockey do this.
Crown Pride takes the lead around the far turn. It is Crown Pride battling with Messier. They're stride for stride. Epicenter and Zozo's in behind them. Cyberknife sweeps up to the outside. Sandon gets the rail run, and they're into the stretch. And it's Messier, Crown Pride, then Epicenter is coming up on the outside. Epicenter has taken the lead as they arrive into the final furlong. Sandon is coming after him. Epicenter and Sandon, these two, stride for stride. Simplification down the outside is next. They're coming down to the wire. Epicenter, Sandon, Rich Strike is coming up on the inside. Oh, my goodness. The longest shot has won the Kentucky Derby. Rich Strike has done it in a stunning
The unbelievable upset at Churchill Downs. Rich Strike wins the Kentucky Derby. Now, Anna, you're the one who alerted me to this. I found out from you that Rich Strike this morning, you said, hey, you know, Rich Strike's not running in the Preakness. I think there's strategy behind this, certainly. They're saying they want to rest the horse. I don't think that's it. I think they know that they have a premium right now. It's all about stud fees.
Mm-hmm.
There's a premium right now that they can get for Rich Strike. And I think they don't want to diminish it by running in the Preakness.
Oh, interesting.
And the Belmont is a longer race. It's the longest of the three races. And Rich Strike is a bit of a finisher, as we saw there. So I think that they feel like, you know, the Preakness is probably, from a business standpoint, a bad proposition. Because if he gets into that race and finishes, you know, dead last, like he was supposed to in the Kentucky Derby, you're only hurting your stud fees.
So then why do the Belmont at all?
They may not do it.
Yeah.
Like, but I think they feel like maybe they're just, I think they're punting that decision.
Uh-huh.
And they're saying, hey, we're resting for the Belmont.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's any incentive right now, if it's about stud fees, to run a horse that was 80-1 in the Kentucky Derby. You've got your payday. You won this damn race.
Mm-hmm.
That horse is going to go make money after it's done racing.
Plus, I wonder how much of a factor the whole issue with the banned jockey thing was. I mean, I know technically he was cleared to race. He would be cleared if they had chosen to race in the Preakness, but it was cutting it pretty close, right?
He did some things he shouldn't have done. Apparently filled out some paperwork that he shouldn't have. He forged some paperwork. He did
Not
some
just
other
that.
Stuff.
I mean, there was one thing about him, like, whipping the animal too much
that
or too
happens.
Hard or something.
That happens in the sport. Like, the jockeys will get, you know, reviewed for that. You know, some of the jockeys are heavier on the whip than others.
Yeah.
And the horsemen out there, we're going to get Jenny Reese back on. Did you hear her? She was fantastic.
Yeah.
She lives at the track. She married a horseman. She she wakes up and puts bourbon in her Cheerios. That's how Louisville Jenny Reese is, okay?
That's great.
And this gives you an example. So she was working at the Louisville newspaper covering the track.
Mm-hmm.
That's what she did. Then she married a horseman.
Okay.
I just love saying that, you know, because it's almost she married a horse. You know what I mean? She married a horseman.
So close, yeah.
Yeah, it's so close. Mm-hmm. And then she decided she didn't want to work for the newspaper anymore.
Uh-huh.
She was just going to work at the track. So she does PR for the track.
Oh.
But basically, I called her up the one day I was at the gym after Rich Strike won. And I said, hey, Jenny, I need to have you on. There's no one else I want to talk about the Derby. It's you. And she's like, okay, I will. And then we got her on air. Adam, you remember when she came on air. She loves to talk. It was almost Bill Walton.
Yeah. Like, she'll say something and then it'll trigger something else that she has to bring up. I think you got two or three questions in.
It was Bill Walton. Like, it really was. Like, a conversation between Jenny Reese and Bill Walton would be fantastic. But she, you know, I want to get to her on the strategy of that. My suspicion is, my theory is that the owners of Rich Strike have done an assessment and gone, look, lightning struck. We won the Derby.
Mm-hmm.
There's no upside here to running in the Preakness and finishing 12th.
Yeah.
So let's just punt to the, you know, we're going to rest for the Belmont. We'll make that decision later.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah, it feels like a backup quarterback who has one really good game, and then his shoulder starts hurting midweek, and he gets paid off that one really good game.
Yes. I can do this. I can win the Derby.
But I have questions about, though, because, like, how much can they really charge for those stud fees, given that his proof of performance is one really amazing Kentucky Derby race? Like, if I'm a buyer, you know, I think that's a big part of the negotiation.
Yeah.
Like, okay, you won one race. I know it was, like, the race, but you know, there's not a lot of track record there.
Well, I'm glad you asked. Let's go to Derby winners. Okay. Justify won the Derby recently. 2018. Justify won the race. And then Always Dreaming won the Derby in 2017. And now you can $55,000 is their stud fee. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Per incident.
Mm-hmm.
$55,000.
Forgive me, that's $55,000 for
producing a live foal.
Okay.
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 Per incident. I'm calling it an incident.
An incident.
American Pharoah, $80,000. Okay.
Wow.
American Pharoah won the Derby in 2015.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's more money in this than there is in winning the race. Mm-hmm. Okay. Unless you win all three legs of the Triple Crown. But then if you win all three legs of the Triple Crown, then, you know, it's a lot more.
Yeah. Sure.
So the other thing that's interesting, like I mentioned American Pharoah, I believe there are 24 stakes winners. American Pharoah has sired 24 stakes winners. Okay. Mm. So it has a track record of producing great horses. But Mischief, who was the sire of Authentic, which won a Kentucky Derby, mm-hmm. gets $225,000 per event. So
that's big money.
The range of that is, you know, the range of that, by the way, Secretariat made $6 million
mm-hmm. over
in stud
its lifetime.
Fees. Yeah. But Secretariat, you know, that was way back when.
Yeah.
Okay? So you can talk about, you know, strategy all you want, but I think, like, remember, they bought this horse, claimed this horse, you know, they claimed it for $30,000. So if I'm the owner of this horse, I'm going, we could, there's millions of dollars at stake here. And I do think they're, like, the competitor in me is like, race the damn horse. It's a Triple Crown. That's what, this is what's supposed to happen here, mm-hmm. you know? And if it's not safe, we need to talk to, like, the Horse Racing Association and go, hey, can we move the Triple Crown races? Can we space them out, like, a little bit more so that we don't ever have this problem again? But mm-hmm. that's not the problem. The problem is they are not wanting to run this horse because they're afraid the 80-to-1 shot's going to show up and not the winner.
Right.
You know?
Right. They don't want to diminish its value. They're going to maximize the profit.
Maximize the profit. That's and I don't blame them for that, but let's not fool everyone into thinking this is about resting the horse. Okay? We saw that horse run. That horse doesn't need any rest.
We saw that horse try to eat some other horses.
Yeah. The horse was so tired after the race, tried to, oh yeah, I just beat the competition. Now I'm going to eat the competition. Leave it here. Get the BFT.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.